profit by that, calling him up to go set reservoir valves. Now he's GM.
Crazy.
Well, good evening. We're still missing one director. Is Director Orzechowski scheduled to come tonight? He is. Maybe we can take some of the easier items. Do those first. That's all right. How about let's go ahead with the monthly operations and production report.
Would you like to start with the Pledge of Allegiance?
Oh, excuse me. I got to make my statement. Right. Yes, no. Please stand and join for the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay. Let me do this announcement. This meeting is being conducted in person at the Summit Circle Engineering Services Section Boardroom. As a convenience to the public, members of the public may also participate virtually by logging into the agency's Zoom meeting. Any member of the public may listen to the meeting or make comments to the committee using the call-in number or Zoom webinar link. In the event there is a disruption of service which prevents the agency from broadcasting the meeting to members of the public using either the call-in option or internet-based service, this meeting will not be postponed or rescheduled, but will continue without remote participation. The remote participation option is being provided as a convenience to the public and is not required. Members of the public are welcome to attend the meeting in person. We have nobody here tonight. The procedures for tonight's meeting are as follows. I will introduce each agenda item. Staff will present. I will ask for public comments. I will then ask for discussion and questions from the committee. The committee will then come to a consensus on whether to board move this over to the board or not. Any PowerPoint shown on tonight's meeting will be posted on the SCB website. And that's it. No public comments. Are there any public comments? Why?
No public comments.
Thank you. Okay. We go to Peter's here. Great.
Sorry about that.
That's quite all right.
We have a missed anything.
Pledge.
Let's go right on to your item three. This is to recommend approval of a resolution pursuant to categorical under CEQA guidelines and a exclusion under NEPA for the approval of the purchase of a CORTEC on-site sodium hypochlorite generation system.
And Ryan Bai is with us, our water system, one of our water system supervisor, and he'll be giving the presentation.
Hello. Thank you, Mike, for the introduction. Yes, tonight we're bring to the committee approval adopting of a resolution for the purchase of a Denora Chlortech on-site sodium hypochlorite generation system for the Lower Heron residual management system. Next slide, please. The Lower Heron tanks, a little bit of background about them. There are two tanks, both 2.5 million gallon capacity. They are part of the North Oaks zone, and they float with the Olympian tanks. Both of the Lower Heron tanks have altitude valves to keep them from overflowing. That is because the pad elevation between the Olympian tanks and the Lower Heron tanks isn't precise, and without those altitude valves, they would overflow. This comes into play later when dealing with water quality issues and the reason for this residual management system. It's also important to note that there is an on-site booster at the Lower Heron tank site that pumps water up to the Upper Heron tanks. Next slide, please. So here you can see the two different tank site facilities. The Lower Heron tank site, just to the right of that first tank there near the site, access road, that is the booster station that pumps to the Upper Heron tanks. So from a water quality perspective, there is a direct influence between the Lower Heron tanks and the Upper Heron tanks. The Upper Heron tanks are what feed the homes that are below the Lower Heron tanks right there. Next slide, please. So what is this project addressing? As you all may know, our main source of disinfectant in our distribution system is chloramine. That's a made up of chlorine and ammonia. Dealing with chloramine is challenging in that we have to make sure that we take action to prevent nitrification. What happens is if there is any excess ammonia, bacteria convert that into nitrite and then to nitrate. But more than that, during that whole process, it produces more free ammonia, which produces more bacteria and ends up being a water quality concern because you end up having a decreased chlorine residual and increase of bacteria. And one way that we do that to address this is through batch chlorination of our tanks. So that's what that icon there is showing is during batch chlorination, operators will climb tanks and add additional chlorine to bind up with any free ammonia and eliminate any nitrates that are formed and essentially inactivate the bacteria that are forming within those tanks. While this is a common practice, it is not a perfect solution. And it ends up, in some cases, as in these lower Heron tanks, being an ongoing issue due to that altitude valves that essentially keep water from cycling in the tanks that you would be able to help prevent some of this nitrification and just the distance between the Olympian tanks and the lower Heron tanks. It's an ongoing issue that the batch chlorination doesn't perfectly resolve. Next slide, please. So this kind of just shows the frequency in which the lower Heron and upper Heron tanks were chlorinated in the course of 91 weeks. So from 2022 to September of 2023, generally these tanks are monitored once a week. So after monitoring, depending on the water quality results will dictate whether these tanks need additional chlorine. So lower Heron in and of themselves, it's not too bad. We're 11 times and 16 times over the past 91 weeks. But upper Heron, we see 37 and 36 times. That roughly is about 40% of the time these tanks need additional chlorine added to them. Also within this area is the Oak Crest tanks and the Cherry Willow tanks. Both of these tanks and zones take water from the North Oak zone near the lower Heron tanks. So just to put this in perspective, the lower Heron tanks is where we're proposing to put the residual management system, but the influence that we're talking about is much greater than just the tanks themselves. Next slide, please. So why a residual management system is needed for this location? The predominant reason is just improve water quality. We're actively trying to control nitrification to ensure that we have a safe drinking water for this area. And so it is labor intensive. And it's ends up being a better long-term solution. When you batch chlorinate tanks, it's like I said, it's not ideal. It could disrupt the chlorine to ammonia ratio. And then it is a temporary fix. It only fixes the water that is in that tank at that time. It's not a long-term effective solution. It also helps with labor efficiency. So rather than operators climbing these tanks and fighting this ongoing problem that you don't have any resolution to, what it ends up doing is operators end up instead maintaining this residual management system. And it's a better use of operator time. And the last item is benefits multiple facilities. This location was chosen because it was strategically has a greater effect on those multiple zones in a better part of that North Oaks zone. So it is a strategic location which will benefit multiple locations. Next slide, please. So what is a residual management system? I like to think about it in three different parts. The first part is the on-site sodium hypochlorite generation, and that is the portion that we're asking for purchase for tonight. And that is where you take chloride in the form of salt. You mix it with water to create a brine solution, and that undergoes electrolysis, and you create a 0.8% sodium hypochlorite solution. So it's a weak sodium hypochlorite solution, so it's very safe to work around, and it is very stable. So adequately judging your dosing ratios, it ends up being easier to do and easier to achieve. So that's the first portion, is the on-site generation. The second portion is the chemical dosage. You can see in the center of the screen, there are two analyzers. Based upon the chlorine residual within those tanks and through set points within SCADA, it will allow us to dose both chlorine and ammonia at the correct ratio within one or both of the tanks as needed to boost that chlorine residual up and to maintain a chlorine residual within those tanks. The third portion itself is a mixing part. So when you pump the chlorine and ammonia into the tank, it wouldn't do much unless you had a good mixing solution. And so we have mixers in these tanks that would effectively mix this disinfectant with the water in the tank and help distribute it and make sure that there is a good chlorine residual. Next slide, please. So some financial considerations. The first is the Denora on-site generation package. That is $220,000. And then there is chemical storage. That is the brine solution tank, the sodium hypochlorite tank, and the liquid ammonium sulfate tank, the ammonia. That is $29,000. And then there's chemical pumps, the chlorine and ammonia pump for each one of the tanks. That is $38,000. Analytical equipment, those are the analyzers that I showed last slide, $33,500. Building and construction, $115,000. And the last is electrical and SCADA upgrades for $175,000 for a total of $610,500. Next slide, please. The strategic plan objectives. This project supports SCB Water Strategic Plan Goal D, ensuring the water is safe to drink and conducting our operations in a fashion that is sensitive to the environment and in compliance with environmental requirements is a key in commitment SCB Water to the community we serve. It also aligns with strategic D11, meet all applicable water quality regulations. Next slide, please. So recommendation that the Engineering and Operations Committee recommends that the Santa Cruz Valley Water Agency Board of Directors approve adopting the attached resolution pursuant to a categorical exemption under CEQA guidelines, section 15301, and a categorical exclusion under NEPA for the approval of the purchase of a Denora Chlorotech on-site sodium hypochlorite generation system for the Lower Heron Residual Management System, in the amount of $610,500. And that is it. I am available for questions.
See any questions from outside?
I don't see no public comment.
Thank you. Questions from the committee? Director Rozovsky.
Okay, so the tanks were constructed in 1998. We started using chloramine in roughly around 2003.
Three, four.
Before I ask that question, one question, why Denora? Why Denora was chosen to launch?
Ryan will answer that.
Yeah. So these aren't new systems. We've tried a couple different on-site generation systems. Denora has really good customer service. On top of it, we have more Denora systems in our units, in our system, so we don't have to have many different parts on the shelf. What we could do is, if there is something wrong, we have extra parts needed. Each manufacturer normally requires different parts, so you were able to standardize the parts and have less downtime. And then operators also are very familiar with these units on working on them and making sure that they're running properly.
So from your experience, whenever you had any issues with Denora, their customer service and technicians were readily available and were able to facilitate any repairs or do any necessary upgrades?
Yeah, so our staff has decades of experience working on the Denora Cortex systems. So generally speaking, most things can be handled in-house, whether it's upgrades or repairs. In the few exceptions where we have had to reach out to Nora, there's something we could not figure out. They've been very responsive, and they provided either over the phone guidance or come out to meet us and help resolve any issues that we might have.
Okay. Right, thank you.
Yeah.
Great question.
Ryan, these zones are you're dealing with over there in the Fair Oaks / whatever Olympia.
Yeah.
Are they primarily fed from the Sand Canyon Reservoir?
They are fed predominantly from the turnouts that are off of the Sand Canyon Reservoir. But generally speaking, they're not really close to the Sand Canyon Reservoir. So, I mean, yes, it is, but they are quite a long distance away from the Sand Canyon Reservoir. They are, you know, they do have turnout water. So that's the primary source of supply is the turnout.
Sounds like the Olympia tanks and the Heron tanks have water that's probably pretty old in the system. Is that maybe a way of saying it?
Yeah, that is a fair way of saying that it has long residence time. In addition to the turnouts that feed that zone, this water also gets water from a lower zone, the Hombi zone. We're undergoing a whole name change, so these zone names might change in the future. So there is a longer residence time sometimes because water is being pumped from the Hombi zone and possibly, you know, coming from the Sand Canyon Reservoir. And then by the time it makes its way over to these lower Heron tanks, there is increased water age, yes.
Back to the equipment again. How many units do you think the agency has in the system?
We have two residual management systems that are both Denora Cloratec, and then we have, I believe, four that are not residual management systems. They're used primarily for dosing raw well water. And then there is one, I believe, OSEC unit, which is a Walson Tiernan product at, I think, our caustic disinfection facility. So in all, I believe there are seven.
Wow.
And there are plenty more coming with engineering. There, any tanks that we're building that are in the far outskirts of our distribution system are going to be outfitted with these residual management systems.
Maybe I missed something. Does this include ammonia addition too?
That is correct. Yeah, it is liquid ammonium sulfate. So it's the safer, less hazardous form of ammonia to work with. It's something that we've been converting all of our sites over to.
All right. Thank you. It's necessary.
And regarding the nitrate threshold, can you tell us now what it is?
Yeah, it's 0.020 milligrams per liter is when we start taking action. Sometimes even before that, if we know that is a problematic tank, So that is our, in our nitrification action plan, that is our trigger.
And this is a manual test weekly, or do we already have some SCADA there that does it for us?
It is a manual test that operators check at the facilities weekly. So we check distribution system tanks once a week and distribution sample taps once a week also.
The just to add on to that, the measurement that you're taking consistently for the dosing is total chlorine residual. Is that correct?
That is correct. Yes, it is a total chlorine residual.
Anything else? Just a question that I had.
Sure.
For you.
And I have a couple.
Oh,
thanks. But go ahead.
Okay. Daddy, how can you specify Denora? Don't you have to through the bidding system?
Sole source.
You can sole source it?
Yeah. We've tried, as Ryan was saying, we've tried several other units and they just don't work. They just don't perform the same way that this does.
Not even Wallace and Jeremy.
Yeah, the OSEC unit is is less than
whatever.
Yeah, they have been. They just haven't gotten it right. It's a really unique process for on-site generation and chloramination. We've actually rebuilt the entire Cascade disinfection facility. So it's technically still an OSEC system, but it's really a homegrown system. We've had to modify it.
And you had a couple of things.
Yeah, well, I wanted to mention the name changing. They're being very patient with me. We did pull the Band-Aid off. All the tanks have been renamed. And Ryan used the new name. So those Lower Heron and Upper Heron were Lower Fair Oaks and Upper Fair Oaks. So now we've named them after the street that they're on.
That's good.
Yeah, the Olympian tanks were the North Oaks tanks. We're also going through the process of changing the zone names and redefining how we're doing the zones. We're working with Jason on the master plan and our consultant on that. But I do also want to hand it to Ryan. RMS actually is reservoir management system, but I refuse to call it that because these aren't reservoirs. They're tanks, they're storage tanks. And what they're doing is they're managing the residuals. So I said, let's use residual. And he fought a little bit, but thank you for using it, Ryan.
I'm a team player.
You're pretty confident with the Denora and the services provided with them and the equipment.
Yeah, the Denora is BFDF, the ball field disinfection facility that was just built, the Valley Center, the wells that those have Denora systems. Yeah, it's just.
So you'll stick with that for your future PFAS?
Yeah. Yeah. Hands down.
Okay.
Yeah.
And the zones will be Bob, Jason.
Give you a little insight. So what we've talked about, and this is way going off topic, but nobody really knows where Hanby is, right? There's a Hanby street, but the Hanby zone is huge. Everybody knows where Canyon Country is. And so we're kind of going to go about that way. And we're also doing it hydraulic grade. So the 1300 hydraulic grade will be a zone one. Anything in there might have different. You have Valencia zone one, you might have something else. And then the 1400 is going to be the whatever zone two. So it's we'll present it at some point.
That's going to be interesting.
Yeah.
Just for my own peace of mind, when you reach the threshold, water in that tank is not being delivered, is not being utilized, right? It's the valves are closed until. No,
it's being utilized. Ryan, talk through the nitrification monitoring plan.
Yeah, so there are different actions that we could take, whether it's looking at operationally cycling tanks more, dead-end flushing if there are distribution system problems, batch chlorination, as I had mentioned before. So there's some tools in our toolbox, if you start having this nitrification problem where you have bacteria growing rampantly, it sometimes just requires additional chlorine. There's really no other way around it. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Do you know off the top of your head or do you have it? Because there's different thresholds.
Yeah.
There's a threshold where you start taking action. And these are plans that we that are approved by Division of Drinking Water. So at the 0.002, that's when you take your first action. But there's also a point where you take HPC samples, then there's a point where you take total coliform samples. So there's a process before you get to the point where you say, hey, you know what, we got a real problem. Mm-hmm. Do you know those, Ryan? Do you recall?
Yeah, that is correct. Yeah. So with our reservoirs, we take action over 0.020. And our distribution system, it's a triggered response. So if it is below 0.20 and the chlorine is above half a part or 0.5 milligrams per liter, that is we considered sufficient. If the nitrite is above 0.020 and the chlorine is above a part, then what we do is we try to do some things, like I said, dead end flushing, cycling of tanks, looking to see if we need to add additional chlorine to the tank. If the chlorine is below half a part and the nitrite is above 0.020, it requires a HPC test, heterotrophic plate count, and to ensure that the colony forming units are under 500 milligrams per liter. So it is a tiered response. And then in dosing tanks, yeah, that is a tiered response too. It's, you know, whether you essentially need to trim the tank or if a tank needs to be broken over to free chlorine.
Okay. And when you say when we count number of cells here or organisms, sorry, I take it we do that here in the lab at Rio. Is that right?
That is correct. Yeah, that is something we do in-house. We specify during we've aligned. So one of the processes that we've done when we became one agency is we went through and standardized practices. So one of the practices that we had with one of our agencies is we did nitrification monitoring along with our total coliform monitoring in our distribution system to help try to gain some efficiencies. So we do our total coliform monitoring in the distribution system while we're doing our nitrification monitoring. If that HPC is needed, what we do is we mark it as needing an HPC also, or heterotrophic plate count. And that is taken to our lab and analyzed by the lab.
Right. Okay, good question, Mr. Elwood. Do we have a flow cytometer in the laboratory, or is it all dyes? Okay.
That's a good question. Yeah, okay. Yeah. I don't know. I don't think so.
What?
It's instead of using a microscope, a dye, and a slide, you just you use a machine, a laser machine that counts the number of organisms.
I don't think so. For the total coliform, it's something called Cold Alert.
Oh, yeah, no, I know that.
And then, yeah, for the heterotrophic plate count, I think they're still counting.
Yeah, they are. Yeah. It's a little square.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's what I did way back when I did.
Yeah. I mean, before Cold Alert, they did something called MPN, most probable number. It was a test tube, and it was about fermentation in the test tube. And, yeah, it was... So the Cold Alert's great, but yeah, I think they're still doing the
Cold Alert's much quicker.
Yes, yeah, and more accurate.
Yeah.
Back to you, Chair.
Thank you. Any other questions?
Can this be on consent?
Yes, I think so. Would you?
Yeah.
It should be a simple item.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. We'll move on to item four. This is to recommend approval of a resolution pursuant to categorical exemption under CEQA guidelines. Same with NEPA for Copper Hill Water Storage Tank Coating Process.
And we have James Sines, who's our other water systems supervisor, his counterpart to Ryan, and he'll be giving this presentation. Go ahead, James.
All right. Can you hear me?
Yep, you can.
All right. Hello, my name is James Sines, and this is my presentation to recommend approval of a resolution awarding a contract for Bell Dove, formerly Copper Hill Tank 2 Water Storage Coating, Tank Coating. Next slide, please. ICB has approximately 108 storage tanks with a combined storage of 165 million gallons. Water system staff conducts general weekly inspections of each tank, with the full cleaning and inspection contracted and completed every 3 to 5 years. Next slide. Epoxy coatings are designed to protect the integrity of the sealed tanks and are designed to last between 20 to 30 years. Next slide. Belldove Tank 2 was constructed in 1988. An assessment was conducted in 2021 by CSI Services, and based on their inspections, they recommend a complete interior recoat and some spot repairs on the exterior. Next slide. Belldove Tank 2 is located at 2200 Belldove Court in the Cattell Zone. There's some photos of some of the corrosion inside and outside of the tanks or tank. Next slide. Here are the bid results, with the lowest responsible bid being $514,600 or $467.60 by Polytech Industrial Inc. under the engineering estimate of $550,000. Next slide. This project supports Santa Clarita Valley Water Agency's Strategic Plan B11, implement capital projects related to infrastructure reliability. Next slide. And funding for this project is provided through the CIP storage tank improvement and replacement budget and is included in the fiscal year 23-24 budget. Next slide. And in conclusion, we recommend that the Engineering and Operations Committee recommends the Board of Directors to approve the attached resolution pursuant to a categorical exemption under CEQA Guidelines Section 15301 and a categorical exclusion under NEPA, awarding a contract for Belldove 2 Water Storage Tank Project to Polytech Industrial for $514,467. And to add to the consent calendar. Thank you very much. And if there are any questions, I'll be happy to answer.
Very good. Thank you. Do you have any comments or questions?
No public comment.
Nothing?
No.
Okay. Ready?
Yeah. Quick questions here. So from 1988 to 2005, that's 17 years. From 2005 to 2023, that's close to 18 years. Is that a normal lifespan of interior linings here that we've experienced at SCV Water and, you know, predecessor agencies?
Based on, you know, the number of tanks that we do have, yes. You know, we try to get at least get the inspections and cleanings done to try to help with the lifespan. We do, based on those inspections, we do kind of prioritize. So this one being, you know, next on the list based on, you know, the time frame, you know, still within the 20 and 30 year time span.
Okay. Have we had any linings that lasted for 20 or 30 years with inspection and maintenance?
Mostly I've seen the exterior linings will probably last a little longer. You know, with the example of this tank, this one, you know, would just have some spot repairs for the really highly corroded areas on top, mostly in the center where the vent is. So yeah, you could probably see the coatings lasting a little longer.
If you notice, the majority of the internal corrosion is always in the area that's not underwater.
Yeah.
It's just that moisture.
Same thing on the ships.
Yep. Yeah, I bet.
Especially with seawater, too.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
It's salt in the air. Okay. So looking at this trend here, 17, 18 years, how many of these linings do we have in the next 2-3 years? Do we expect like one every year, one every 2 years?
We tried to. So since I came aboard, we've tried to do 2 or 3 a year. We are currently in the process of doing 2 tanks right now. Actually, as I speak, We have two tanks being coated now. This will be the third one for this fiscal year. So yes, we try to do 2 to 3 a year.
Okay. Well, thanks, Brent, for those questions. Back to you, Chair.
Director Peterson.
James, when the inspection was done, I was looking at the photos on your presentation. The tank was empty, I guess. Is that correct?
For this one, the tank was not empty. They were, it was just not completely full.
Oh, okay.
There is the overflow that doesn't allow to fill completely. So when you're seeing the photos of the roof and the rafters, that's not underwater because we can't fill it to that point.
Well, I understand that. There was the other photo of not the rafters, but the is it a side of the tank?
That is also the inside of the roof on the towards the side.
Okay, so for the most part, the coating below the water surface was pretty good shape.
With some spots of pitting, and you can also see areas where we do add, like Ryan was talking about, adding chlorine to tanks. That does kind of wear away and corrode a little bit. So in areas, especially tanks like this, where we do add chlorine, that kind of adds to that corrosion underwater, and some small areas around the ladders and stuff like that.
So in your experience of now, you've been with the agency about a year now.
Yep.
How many tanks have you been inside?
I've been inside this. I've been inside a few for Santa Clarita. Actually, when I was a former Valencia employee, so I was inside a few for Valencia. So now that I'm back, I've been in some Santa Clarita tanks now.
Well, I was getting to the question is that, have you seen any, or they, I know from previous experience that the agency has not got into adding anodes to reservoirs. Does any of the reservoirs that you've seen has passive anodes?
Not that I've seen, no.
Okay.
Courtney and I were actually just having a conversation about that.
Okay.
There's obviously a difference of opinion between engineering and operations, but we agreed that we will take a deeper look and start possibly adding them to future steel tanks and maybe even some existing. We'll see.
Yeah.
Generally what happens is the anodes go bad and then nobody spends the time to repair and fix them.
Yeah.
Why?
Legacy beliefs, operations, not keeping an eye on it. Not
the other aspects of anodes. If you get too many of them,
right,
you can blow the coating off.
Exactly. It could be worse.
Yeah. So it's a dynamic.
It really is. You got to do it right. If you don't do it really right, it's not thoroughly engineered right, thoroughly maintained right, correctly, it's actually worse. And so operations in the past have typically seen shorter lifespan of that. And so when the anodes fail, they just shut it off.
Yeah.
So what we've had a discussion last week specifically about this, and we've come to a mutual agreement and understanding.
Now, we do have some sort of a preventive maintenance service system where everything needs to be inspected on that particular
yes.
time. So
yes.
why not adding that to that schedule?
Yeah, they definitely can. I mean, but I only think there's maybe 2 or 3 tanks in the legacy system that has anodes, that had them in the past.
No.
I don't think it was common practice.
No,
I know Valencia, I think the Valencia had one maybe. Newhall may have had one. I don't remember if Santa Clarita ever did. I'm talking more just in general of operation versus engineering on that sort of topic.
Can't imagine a ship of that one.
Yeah.
Well, what we ended up doing is we had the same problem with tanks, is that it's the roof. It's above the water line.
Right.
That's, and the chlorine that's in there will eat up the top part of the tank and it corrodes it. And then the beams that are across there, the plates are on top. They're not welded. They're loose so that they can move with heat. And so you get corrosion up on top of those, and it's a mess, and it's hard to coat. You can't get in there to coat anything above the beams. So we took and moved the beams on the outside of the tank. We put a support ring around the tank, and then you've got a center that's in the middle of the tank. You've got a big post that's usually in the middle of them, and supported and ran the beams on the outside. So everything inside was nice and smooth, and that made a difference. But it's expensive.
Yeah, we looked at doing external rafters.
Yeah,
it definitely is an eyesore. Then you have to build a shield around it so it kind of prevents the eyesore. But what we're doing instead now is we're doing pre-stressed concrete.
Right. Yeah,
we have. Is it two plates?
Yeah.
Under construction.
Pre-stressed concrete. Yeah. You remember Orange County, right? Or.
Anything related to pre-stress
when the one that blew out down there. Okay, so we'll move this on to the board and we'll put it on the consent calendar.
Yeah. Thank you, James.
Thank you. Very good.
Thank you.
Monthly operations production report.
Yeah, there's a couple things. We're still leaning heavily on import supplies. We're about 75% year to date. But I heard a murmur from Sarah Fleury today that they may want us to start taking more groundwater. So she said we'd meet today. Tomorrow we have our biweekly operational water resource meeting. So, and then the groundwater levels have been stable. Interesting enough, three wells have hit their historic high in groundwater levels.
Right.
One of them's on the far east end of the valley, P5, which is the second furthest. The other one's on the farthest west end of the valley, E15, which is the second furthest on the west, which is interesting in itself. Now, it makes more sense that E15, but just because all the water flows to the west, right? But we aren't operating P5 because it shut down because of PFAS. So that could be a reason why the groundwater levels are historic high. But it's whatever the reason is, it's good news. And then 207, which is a SOG as well, which is our furthest west SOG as well. Which if you think about it, right, the SOG is sort of a bowl that flows that direction too. And that's all the sort of anomalies or interesting tidbits from that. And the rest is in your report. If you have any questions.
Any questions?
No public comment.
No public comment.
Thank you.
Any questions from the committee?
Fun to look at those charts a little bit this time, and
yep,
you see you go up and it's starting to come down, then go up again.
Yeah.
From that little rain.
That was a little 6-inch rain that we got at the end there that went back up again. Okay, seeing no questions. Jason, CIP, construction status.
Yep, so construction is still underway for all those different projects you see in the packet, the CIP construction status report. All the list of projects and status, you know, we are in the process of closing out several of them. You know, recently, some of them just recently got started, waiting for materials, like, for example, the Rio Vista UST project, the underground storage tank. But other than that, yeah, that's everything is just going to the construction. And in the near future, we'll have some more projects coming onto this table as we advertise some more coming up. Like our phase 2C, we plan to advertise after construction pretty soon. And some of our other projects.
Like we've got several that are about to drop off of this. So.
Right.
Any questions outside?
No public comment. Thank you.
Committee?
What about the DM tank that Skyline arranged, the 0.11% change order? What was that all about?
I'm familiar with that change order. Then I would have to give back to our court report next month.
Okay.
Okay. Seeing no questions, we'll move on to committee planning calendar.
Yep. So the planning calendar that's also in your packet, as tonight, you have two agenda items. January, we have about two or three agenda items. So we're kind of fairly, you can see in the future, trying to balance that out as well in terms of the number of items coming to the committee. So January, you can see we have one for the Pondo Tank Pipeline bottleneck, for final design, and then also for our magic line and pipeline phases 1 through 3 inspection access modifications. And there's one for a Verizon Wireless license as well. So that's coming on January 4th. And you can see a whole long list on the February committee actually coming up as well.
Operations might add one to the January one. It's the purchase of meters. We're trying to see about the lead time and such, though. If it's not that long of a lead time, then we don't need to push it in January, but it's part of the AMI grant. And yeah.
No public comment.
No public comment.
Thank you, Jimmy.
Any questions on the calendar?
No questions.
February is going to be a busy month. Yeah. It's like January.
That's why I'd like to get it on January.
And general report on treatment distribution operations.
Yeah, so I guess I'll just continue with that. The lead times are shortening. I think they're up to almost 60 weeks, I think, but now it's maybe 20 to 30. So we're still seeing, it depends. Xylem recently purchased Sensus, and customer service actually seems to be a little bit better. So maybe that has something to do with the lead times improving. I'm not sure.
Xylem?
Yeah.
What is that?
XLYEUM. There's some big, they also recently bought Evolqua. Yeah, there's some, I don't know, multinational corporation that is buying up stuff.
Other stuff.
So far, it hasn't affected us at all.
Prices are the same?
Yep. No prices have increased at all. So,
how many more do we have to go? Approximately.
So, on the AMI, we're on phase 3 that we're calling Castaic Plus. It's just under 5,000. And this is the Quincy area below Hasley Canyon, Castaic area. Right above that, part of Commerce Center, and then all of the traditional Castaic area in the what's considered Castaic. They finished about 1,800 out of that close to 5,000. So we're about 40%, I guess, is that what it is? Something like that. I think they should be finishing that up probably by the end of this month, unless, you know, we get some rain days or such. And then we'll be bringing in the next, what we're going to call phase 4. I can't remember what we termed this one. We're trying to term it based on the location, so it means a little bit more than just phase. But these close to 5,000 will bring us to just over half of our grant obligation, which is around 21,063 or something like that. And we'll then have to do the rest of that in that next year and a half. And so the next one, our field services supervisor, Steve Patterson, is a little ambitious. He wanted to go for 11,000 on this next RFP. I said, no, let's cut that in half and we'll do 2 5,000 ones to get to the end. But this new, we had 2 bids on the last one, as you recall, and the low bid we've chosen, Genesis, I think is the name, they're really doing well. They're really, not that Golden Meter Services was bad, but these guys are definitely a step up. So, you know, we'll see what happens next time during the RFP. In terms of other stuff, Ryan's group has started on the Saugus 2 rehab. They've already pulled the pump and motor. They videoed it, and they're going to start the chemical and brushing next week. Begonias, that's another one. We're getting ready to send an RFP. The project's done, but we need to pave it, and it's just over 30,000, so we're going to have to bid it. It is what it is. And then Bonita, we're getting ready to do that. You approved that several months ago, but there's still a couple holdouts for the easement that I don't think they're holdouts. It's just it's hard to get people to sign paperwork and such. That is it, except for, do you know if Adrian's on?
Yes, he is.
Okay. So if you remember, we've added 2 supervisor positions to really sort of spread out the workload, because on the utility operations side, both those guys, Josh Jenkins and Roger Hitchin, had 16 direct reports each. And so we added a position there. We had two candidates that were interviewed. One was internal, one was external. Courtney was on the panel. Ali El-Hassan was on the panel. And then we had somebody from Burbank. And Dylan Shan-Farber, who's one of our seniors, he got the position based on the interview and his qualifications and everything. So he's one of our new utility operations supervisors, which we're going out for recruitment again because Roger has upped his retirement. He's leaving February
29th. Wow.
Yeah.
Does he understand how PERS works?
He went and already talked. And I told him, I said, I pleaded and begged. I even tried to bribe him, but none of it worked. He's got some situations where I think it's just forcing him to leave a little earlier. He was intending on July, so it was still next year, but it's several months sooner. So we'll be doing that again. But on the water system side that you saw Ryan and James, we had two candidates that were interviewed, one internal, one external. And if you want to show him, I don't know if he wants to turn on his camera, if you can.
Adrian, you can go ahead and turn on your camera.
Adrian Herrera was the internal candidate. And he's going to be a counterpart with Ryan and James. He's our new water system supervisor.
Don't be shy.
I wasn't planning on putting him on the spot, but since
it's okay.
There he is.
Hi, everyone.
Adrian.
Hello. Well, congrats, Adrian.
Thank you. Thank you, gentlemen.
Congratulations. That's great.
Thank you. I look forward to it.
He doesn't officially start until the 18th as a supervisor. But he said, can I log in? I said, yeah, absolutely log in.
Sure.
See what you're in for, what you're up against.
Yeah, I got plenty of notes. Good information. Thank you.
And we'll have you do a report next month.
I'm just kidding.
Thanks, Adrian. Thanks.
Thank you, Mike.
And that's all I got.
Okay. Any questions?
No public comment, Chairman Cooper.
With that buyout, are we expecting prices to go up for those meters or
not? I don't think so. Most utilities have one brand of meter.
Yeah.
And there's a reason for that, right? Because once you have all the infrastructure in place, especially when you start going into technology, whether it's AMR or AMI, the infrastructure is not interchangeable.
Yep.
Fortunately for us, which at first I thought it was going to be a drawback, but we have two. Because the majority of the Valencia, in fact, all of the Valencia was Master Meter, and all of the Santa Clarita was Census, and Newhall actually was a little mix of both. And it's working out really well. They both know that we have two, so there is a little bit of competition.
That's good.
Yeah, so I'm hoping that we're able to take advantage of that. And what we've done and what Steve's done is he's picking and choosing the locations that make sense to do the replacements where we're doing them. So some of the Master Meter locations are actually converting to Census. Some of the Census locations are actually converting to Master, depending on where existing infrastructure is and failure rates and age of the meters and such. So I hope not. The last two resin purchases, which is what we use Evoqua for, who's also been bought out by Xylem. There's been no change in price, and we have another one scheduled replacement next week, same price. So, you know, if I had a crystal ball, I'd be able to better answer your question, but so far nothing is indicating that the prices are going to go up.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
People that are on AMI now, where we have AMI installed, can they get their information online?
Almost. So that is another, so I don't know if you remember, we initially applied for a $500,000 AMI grant and we didn't get it. And one of the reasons is we didn't have a customer portal for the customer. One of the criteria that they wanted. So we worked with Kathleen Wilson, our customer care manager, and she's in the process and we think it's going to be up and running. It's going to be up and running definitely before the end of the grant period. We think it's going to be up and running by the beginning of the next fiscal year, which is a whole year in advance. And so that's why we got the $2 million. So it was actually a blessing that we didn't get the $500,000 because we reapplied and added that to it. And we got the $2 million. So it worked out in this case. Yeah.
Okay. And last one, Jason.
Yeah, well, time is flying. We're already in December already. So actually, believe it or not, we are actually on our on-call consultant list. You know, it's a four-year term for our purchasing policy. So every 4 years, we come to the board to establish a new on-call list. That'll go in effect for 4 years. So we're actually in our fourth year already. So we're in the process of establishing a new on-call list for engineering. And we have an RFQ on Planet Bids as we speak to basically solicit SOQ, statement of qualifications, that we do on February 7th. So if you know any companies out there that are interested, I checked today, we have about 64 companies ready that went on to Planet Bids, take a look at our documents. And we'll be coming to the committee later on this fiscal year, around April, and then to the board in May. So that way, once it becomes board approved, we can then have a new on-call list that will go into effect July 1st of 2024 and run for 4 years from there. So yeah, so we're already at that point. 4 years ago, we did this process. We're currently, our on-call list has 22 companies. So we're going through the whole process again to establish a new one for the next 4 years. So that's going on right now, and you'll be seeing that later on this fiscal year. We're also in the process of hiring an engineering intern. So we have interviews coming up next week for that.
Excellent.
So we're doing that. And one last thing, Court asked me to just mention to you, and you may already see it on, because it's already on the website, under the Water Resources Committee packet. Now, there is an item in there for recycled water. So basically, it's the agreement between the agency and the city to use the Vista Canyon factory. So I wanted to just mention that tonight. You'll see that December 13, which is next week. There'll be a presentation on that to go into the details in terms of that agreement, you know, which establishes the roles, responsibilities for the agency and for the city in terms of the production, the distribution, and the use of the recycled water out of the east side. So that will help expand our east side system, our recycled water system.
That's good. It took them a long time to get that plant running right out there.
No public comments.
And there is to resolve the treatment plant and treatment systems and methods and protocols.
Yeah, so that's all part of that process that we're ironing out. We've been ironing that out now, and expect by January, hopefully that should all be ironed out.
And just for my own sake, what kind of numbers and statements will you be presenting regarding that on-call list?
So once we receive the various SOQs in February, depending on what we receive, because it's going to be very comprehensive in the sense where we may get firms that will submit just for, let's say, specialized services that will do just surveying only, or geotech only, or hydraulic modeling only. So in that case, you know, it wouldn't count against, let's say, a number list of, you know, establishing a certain number for just engineering. But because of that, until we get the SOQs, depending on what we receive, then we can kind of identify, you know, in the different categories, how many of the companies that we could utilize. But there's quite a bit of work. You see in the budget, the 10-year budget that Court has presented in the past. So there's quite a bit of need for various consultants. I mean, when we issue out RFPs now, as you can see, and you'll see it next month as well in the January committee when we present some of the items, you know, we'll issue an RFP out to several companies. We may get, let's say, one company might respond just because we're finding out, you know, some of the other companies are still extremely busy. So it'd be good to, you know, expand that. So that way it gives us more, you know, consultants to be able to access and then be able to get RFPs and get more response.
There's no governmental code on the amount of on-call companies we can have on that list, right? It can be infinite amount.
Correct. Do anything you want, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, right, professional contracts.
Yep.
Are you going to do a geotech on-call, a general engineering on-call, a hydraulic modeling on-call? Are you going to do several different lists? Is that what you're going to do? Or
we'll probably do that once we get the SOQs and identify that. It's just like right now, even though we have 22 on our on-call now, not all 22 is in the same category. We have two firms that are just providing services for construction management inspection only, so they don't do design or anything else. We have a few firms that say they just want to provide services for engineering only, and they don't do CMM inspection. And then you have a list of firms that basically full service. They can do the engineering side and the construction management inspection side. So depending on what we receive, we may get a whole mix as well.
Yeah. That's tough to go through them and try to figure out, yeah.
Looking forward to that. Future.
No questions?
No questions.
And no more questions. We're done.
All right. See you all Saturday.
Thank you. You guys are much,
absolutely.
You guys are much quicker than ever.
Thank you.
Hey, your flight's going to mind. Patricia, are you putting this on December 19th?
Yes.
Okay.
This will go on December 19th on
Thank you.
Correct.
to spend the money on.
Very good.
Yeah.